Trust the process. Find a new slant at King James.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_beeble. No burner accounts here, just my one and only account that's been going for quite a few years now, so make sure you are following me there. We are getting through all of the season recap podcast today. We're going to be looking at an Eastern Conference team, a team that many thought had a chance to go to the NBA Finals after the way things shook out. Wasn't to be, as the Philadelphia 76ers succumbed in the second round to the Boston Celtics. And for us to discuss everything that was the 2017-18 Philadelphia 76ers, I am joined by one of my Basketball Monster cohorts, and that is Greg Ehrenberg.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Greg, you're running in. We're ready to talk Philadelphia 76ers. How are you?
I'm good. Got a Father's Day in the States, not Father's Day over in Australia. We had a very exciting conversation about that before we started as we worked out the volume. But I think the Sixers are kind of like my adopted favorite team at this point, because the Knicks are not much fun to watch. So the Sixers are probably my favorite team to watch in the league and the team that I root for the most.
Yeah, they're a team that I watch quite a bit also. Yeah, my son has adopted the Sixers as his team as well. He's sort of, you know, where do I want to go? He was as all young kids do, he was on the Warriors bandwagon at one point. They went, oh, maybe I want to just go to LeBron. They went, you know what? I'm going to go with the Sixers. I'm going to go with Ben Simmons. I'm going to go with Embiid. So now he's firmly on the Sixers bandwagon, got himself a Sixers hat, and he's fully adopting the we mentality with Philadelphia now. So hopefully he's locked in with that team for time to come in and see this team develop. They did develop this season at a sensational rate, really, well above where I predicted they would go. I thought they'd struggle to get to 45 wins, ended up with 52, lost 30 games, probably could have been higher than that had Embiid's face not been caved in at the end of the season. Finished with the 3 seed, beat the Heat in the first round, and then lost to the Celtics 1-4. Could have been a completely different situation in that second round. There were a few games that were close and they choked away. They were a team who did have trouble with taking care of the ball and turnovers, and that cost them in that playoff series. But overall, Greg, a pretty successful year for the Philadelphia 76ers.
Yeah, for sure. And the other thing, too, about your son, not sure whether he wanted to be on the Sixers bandwagon or LeBron, it could be two of the same next season.
That was sort of whispered into his ear at the beginning of this current season. He goes, oh, do I just go with where LeBron goes next season, or do I go Philadelphia? I go, mate, they could be the same thing. He goes, you know what? That's true. So let's go in that direction. Now, we're not going to focus too much on finding new slants on this podcast, but that Brian Colangelo story was one of the dumbest things I have seen in quite a long time. He was not good for this franchise. I'd criticized him plenty of times, especially given the way that Sam Hinkie was forced out because of the optics of what he was doing and the dishonesty he had with the media, whereas Colangelo was just as dishonest, and then it proved to be even more dishonest as things went on later in the show. His misinformation, lying regarding injuries, poor trade decisions. I think Philadelphia fans will be pretty bloody happy that he's gone.
Yeah, and I think that a lot of Philly fans at this point would welcome Sam Hinkie to come back. So I don't think that that's a total 0% possibility, because he has such a cult following, especially in Philadelphia. People wear Hinkie shirts to games. There's trust the process chants. So we'll see what ends up happening with them. I definitely don't think that there's a total need to fill Colangelo's spot right now, and Brett Brown seems to have a pretty good control of the basketball operation stuff that goes on there, and he's really well liked within the organization, so maybe he could just be a long-term solution in that sense also.
Yeah, I hate the dual head coach GM stuff, so I want him to get someone in there as quickly as possible. It just doesn't work unless you're Greg Popovich, and Brett Brown is not Greg Popovich. Stan Van Gundy couldn't do it. There are plenty of other examples of that not being able to be successful for the short term, fine, but surely they've got to be getting someone in there at some point to run that front office. We're still not there yet, and we're 4 days away from the NBA draft, so it doesn't appear that that's going to be the case with that draft coming up. But I'm sure all the scouts have done all their work, and assistant GMs, and Brett Brown will just be making figurehead type decisions at this point, but some weird stuff going on, no doubt, with this. This was home to two of the weirdest stories in the NBA this season, with the Markelle Fultz shoulder mystery and then the Colangelo thing to wrap up the year. All just sandwiched in there was the Kawhi Leonard situation with San Antonio. So weird shit always going on in the NBA. Let's see how this Philadelphia team looked through the year. They were fourth in the NBA in pace with the 12th best offense and the fourth best defense, largely due to Joel Embiid. But of course, it doesn't hurt when you've got other All-NBA defenders or All-NBA caliber defenders like Bob Cove or Benny Simmons on that team. They were obviously excellent in that sort of a regard. They shot the ball at a high rate, an excellent rebounding team, the best rebounding team in the NBA, number 2 in assists, number 7 in steals, number 9 in blocks, 30th in turnovers, but they were able to create quite a bit of offensive stuff going, and the defensive stuff was clearly fantastic, and Embiid is that impactful of a defensive player. Greg, we will start with the process, with Joel Embiid, with the most entertaining athlete on and off court in the NBA, I believe. He played 63 games in his second NBA season / fourth NBA season, 30 minutes per game, 23 and 11, a 3 per game, 3 assists, half a steal, almost 2 blocks, 48 and 77. And many people were hesitant to draft Embiid. No, he's never going to play any games. He played 63 games before a freak head injury cost him the end of the year, broken cheek. This is something that I mentioned many times when talking about Embiid in the preseason. The minutes restriction's not going to last all season. The back-to-backs aren't going to last all season. And that minutes restriction was basically gone by December, and the back-to-backs were gone by the end of January. And there's still obviously some level of concern, but at some point you have to say, well, he's going to be okay with this. We don't know that for sure. But I think that expecting a 70-72 game season with 32 minutes per game next year, I don't think that's unrealistic at all.
No, not at all. And the other thing, too, is that with Embiid, like you mentioned, the injury that he had at the end of the season was a total freak injury. It's not going to reoccur. This isn't – if it was a foot injury or another knee injury, I'd be more concerned.
Oh, you'd be shitting yourself if that was the case.
He's not going to miss games from that again. And then also, like you said, there was no more back-to-back restrictions. That ended sometime around middle of the season. I don't remember the exact date.
The last one he missed was the 29th of January.
Yeah, so just the idea that he's not going to be – held out of back-to-backs all of next season. He's not going to be missing games for the face injury. I think that the injuries that he had coming into the league, the foot injury, that was kind of a one injury that reoccurred. So I wouldn't look at that foot injury at this point and think of it as a reason for him to miss games. It wasn't, even though it caused him to miss two seasons, it was really the same injury. So it's hard to say that there's no injury concerns with Embiid, but I definitely think it's less than what the general people think it to be.
So if he didn't break his face after Markelle Fultz headbutted him, he missed 10 games there. That's a 73-game season. And, you know, then if he said that, then no one would be complaining about his games played. And again, we have to take these freak injuries out of things. And the other, you know, 9 games he missed, would you do a couple of back flare-ups, but mainly he missed 3 games there in the end of December, a couple at the start of December, but mainly it was just back-to-backs where he sat out like 1, 2, 3 back-to-backs there, 4, 5 back-to-back games, and there was a couple of other injuries. So 4 games he missed due to injuries or back-related issues, and then 5 on back-to-backs. Actually, there's probably 6 back-to-backs, because I remember one of them was a back-to-back that he sat out, and then the back flared up, and he had to miss the next game after that. So, you know, you can add those 16 games back, which is the back-to-backs and the face injuries, and then you're talking about a significantly, you know, great year in terms of injuries. And, of course, freak injuries happen all the time, so I can't say, well, if he didn't get injured, he would have been healthy. That's a nonsense sort of, you know, position to take. But we're looking at it from an overall, hey, how does this project next season? Do I think he'll play 55 games, or do I think he plays 75 games? Which one is he closer to? It's 75 to me.
Yeah, I don't think he plays 75. I don't think he plays 55 either, but certainly low 70s, high 60s, I think is the reasonable expectation for the amount of games that Embiid is going to play.
Yeah, he's a first-round fantasy talent next year. Didn't even talk about where he was for the year. 17th ranked per game in 30 minutes. You bump that to 32, 33, we're talking top 10, top 12 sort of production. And again, people will still be scared with the injuries. They'll look at the games played and go, oh, he only played 94 games over 4 seasons. This is bullshit, not taking him. So you might be able to get him at pick 15 or pick 20. Who knows? And that could provide some decent value there for you in that area of a draft. Now, Benny Simmons, Likely going to be the rookie of the year, the 28th ranked overall fantasy player. And that's doing that while shooting absolutely zero threes and having a punt free throw type situation where he was at 56% on four attempts. If I punt free throws, which you pretty much have to do with Simmons, then I'm trying to get his rank up there. He becomes the 14th best player in the NBA for fantasy. So, sorry, not even that, 12th best, averaging 16, 8, and 8 with 1.7 steals, 0.8 blocks, and 55% from the field. And again, with a Z score of negative 2.8 in that free throw percentage, you pretty much did have to punt it, but you're talking about a first round talent in his first season. And this is without hitting any threes. If I punt threes as well, which is a viable combination, free throws and threes to punt those two, he's the seventh most impactful player. And you're not going to draft him at pick seven in any drafts, but this is how impactful he was, and only averaging 16 points per game. There's a legitimate chance that could increase. But of course, Greg, there is the free agent specter of Kawhi, or the trade of Kawhi Leonard, a Paul George free agency, a LeBron James free agency. Does that impact Simmons that much?
I think it's going to impact – if LeBron comes, it impacts his assists.
Yep.
But I don't see his scoring really going down all that much. And he wasn't a high-usage player last year, usage rating of 22%. Embiid really takes up most of the usage. So in addition of somebody like LeBron or Kawhi, I think would hurt the scoring output of Embiid more than anybody else on the team. In terms of Simmons, though, his value kind of comes from every category other than the free throws and the threes. I mean, he gave you points, assists, both a little over 8 per game. He added a block, 1.7 steals per game last year. Those numbers are still going to be there regardless of who comes to the team.
Yeah, he's still going to be able to do those things. Now, I'm recording these podcasts out of order. I've already recorded the Boston podcast, which is going to come out after this. But when I was doing that podcast, I was talking about guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum heading into their third and second seasons, respectively. And Simmons could be in that case where he doesn't necessarily take the requisite jump between first and second season because of additions of players. Gordon Hayward in Boston, maybe it's LeBron, maybe it's Paul George in Philadelphia. But it doesn't mean he's necessarily going to get worse. He just might put, instead of going from 16 points to 18 points, he might go from 16 to 16 and a half. He might go from 8 assists to 7.5. He might go from, you know, just 12 field goal attempts to 11 and a half field goal attempts. Just marginal changes that we normally expect those guys in their second, third years to take steps forward. He just might be the same from first to second year. And that's pretty bloody good still. Depending on how you're looking at building your team, depends on where he goes in drafts, but he should be considered a top 10 fantasy asset in dynasty type formats. And yeah, a guy that can return that top 10 sort of value in redraft leagues as well. Now, in all my excitement to talk about Kolenja, I forgot to talk about the offseason look for this team, the draft picks and free agents. So we'll do that now. Greg, this team has got 6 draft picks in this upcoming draft. Pick 10. Pick 26, 38, 39, 56, and 60. Clearly, they're not going to be using all of these on players who are going to play this season. Be looking for a ton of European ones in those last picks or consolidation and trading those away. They're not going to use 4 second round picks. Yeah, pick 10 will obviously be on the roster, 26 maybe, but those other ones I wouldn't be expecting too much out of them. And in terms of free agency, JJ Redick is an unrestricted free agent. He's the big one there, key part of their team. Amir Johnson, I don't expect him to be back. Then they've got Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, who are massive, massive minimum salary guys in the playoffs. And yeah, I rail against buyout season in the NBA all the time. People go, when do buyout players ever make an impact? Here you go. This is the example you can use. Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova, they acquired them for free at minimum contracts. And there was really no need for it apart from this bullshit buyout stuff that happens in the NBA. The other two guys they've got as non-guaranteed, Timothy John McConnell and Rashawn Holmes, they were both restricted, or they had team options. The team picked up those options and now they're non-guaranteed until January. Could be used in portions of trades as well. So that's how their off-season is looking, and they do have some cap space there. Also, with this team, do you think, Greg, that Simmons is ever going to hit a three?
Ever?
Well, let's say in the next 3 years. Let's give him next 3 years.
I don't think he's ever going to make them regularly. I'll be interested to see if he could. Like, if he doesn't shoot them at all this season either, I'm going to assume that he's never going to. But I don't think it's out of the question that he eventually starts hitting them. And then something else that I think is interesting is, let's say he could improve his free throw percentage a little bit, because he was only a 56% free throw shooter last year. he's such a big and physical player, and I do think he tends to be a little passive on offense at times because he's afraid of getting fouled and going to the free throw line. If he's able to become from terrible to just slightly below average free throw shooter, I think we could see him become much more aggressive and get to the rim more frequently.
He shot 71% from the line in the playoffs on 60 attempts, so it's not all that small of a sample size. That's almost six attempts per game, 71%. That's pretty significant, in my opinion. If we have a look at what he did at LSU, he was at 67% from the line, so there's clearly scope, and I think that he can become a 70% free throw shooter at some point. Guys we saw like Blake Griffin have been able to increase their free throws. Andre Drummond's an extreme example, but Griffin, every year, you know, 4 or 5 percentage points, he's able to increase that free throw percentage. I see no reason why Simmons at some point can't become a 70% free throw shooter, become a 58% from the field, 70% from the line sort of guy. And I do think that he will start hitting threes. I think he will hit one next season. That's my early bold prediction. I think he'll hit 5 3-pointers next season. I know of people who have worked with Simmons and dealt with him in private workouts. He can hit threes. I don't know why he doesn't even attempt them in the NBA, but he can do it. He can hit them, not at a great rate, but it will come at some point for him, and he is going to be a top... If he gets a 71% from the line, he is a top 10 fantasy guy in every format, pretty much. Nothing to do with punting or roto or head-to-head. He's just a top 10 guy if he can get to that sort of level. But of course, at this point, we're still playing with big ifs. Let's talk Robert Covington, the player who led this team in on-off for the season, 14.8. Embiid was behind him at 12.8. Covington gets a ton of shit from fantasy people. A ton of shit from Philadelphia fans. But he is excellent. He was an all-NBA defender. He is one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. He is a willing three-point shooter. 66% of his shots came from downtown. Didn't shoot them at a necessarily great level, but still had a true shooting of 56%, 37% on his threes, 32 minutes, 12.5 points, 2.5 threes, 5.5 boards, 2 assists, 1.7 steals, a block, and 41% from the field. If you drafted Robert Covington, you're expecting poor field goal percentage. And you know what? You got it. You've got nothing to complain about. But what you were thinking is, can his steals persist? Will his minutes still be up? Will his rebounds be at the level they were? Well, a couple of those things were. The minutes were fine, 32. The rebounding, that dipped with Embiid playing a full season and Simmons being around, but still generated steals, still got the blocks, still hit the threes, and was the 44th ranked player for fantasy. But he is the guy that's at the biggest risk of losing a ton of value depending on what happens in this offseason.
Yeah, if they do happen to acquire LeBron, Paul George, Kawhi, which I think it's relatively like, I would put the odds of them getting one of those three guys probably above 50%. Definitely Covington takes the biggest hit in playing time. And I think the reason that we see so many people on Twitter or just our forums outraged about Covington is he is one of the most frustratingly inconsistent three-point shooters in the league. Just to bring up his month-by-month splits, January he shot 34%, February he shot 29%, March he shot 41%, and April he shot 31%. He's extremely streaky. I don't know what it is about him that he just goes through stretches of really poor and really good shooting, but that's what you're going to get from Covington. But the total aggregate result is probably going to be a really good fantasy player if he gets the minutes.
Yeah, the other guy who's the potential of losing those minutes if a LeBron, Paul George, Kawhi, one of those guys comes is Dario Saric, who moved into the starting lineup early on into the season and played 30 minutes per game. I thought he would struggle to achieve that level of playing time this season, and it appeared that was going to be the case over the first month of the year when Markelle Fultz and Jared Bayless and TJ McConnell at times were getting those minutes, but then they went super big and played Saric at the 4, you know, Covington at the 3, and Simmons exclusively as a point guard. But Saric is a guy that, say, George arrives and they want to keep Covington on there as that perimeter knockdown three-point shooter, then Saric could be that guy who loses those minutes and perhaps not Covington, or it could be both those guys end up being 25-minute-per-game contributors instead of 32 and 30 as they were this season. Now, Dario was the 73rd-ranked player, clearly exceeded my expectations for him. 14.5 points with almost 7 rebounds, 2 threes, 2.5 assists, and 0.7 steals. He's never going to be a high defensive stats sort of a guy, but I was impressed with his shooting, 39% from 3, 45% from the field, and 86% from the line. He struggled to hit the shot in his rookie season, but was able to take that step forward and was impressive. And I don't know, what did you feel about Dario at the start of the season? Were you as down on him and his opportunities this season as what I was?
It's hard to say because I don't remember exactly how down you were on him, but I definitely thought he was going to take a step back from his rookie season, at least in terms of playing time. Not only did he play more minutes, but his shooting was so much better this year. He went from a 31% three-point shooter to a 39% three-point shooter. And also that was kind of reflected in the free throw shooting from 78 to 86%. So I think he just really greatly improved his shooting over the offseason, which made him a much better fit for this offense also, and really allowed them to space the floor when he was playing with Simmons and Embiid at the same time.
Yeah, that was the key. I thought he'd be similar to what he was in his rookie season, where he had 26 minutes per game and he was the 136th ranked player. And I thought that struggle. He was, a 7 percentage point increase in his true shooting percentage is huge. From 51 to 58 is a massive increase. 31% from 3 to 39. I didn't know that he had that increase in him, but clearly he was able to, and that gave him those extra 4 minutes per game and enabled him to jump 60 spots in the fantasy ranking. Because if he couldn't hit those shots at that rate, he wouldn't have been getting 30 minutes per night, and he would have been in that mid-20s, mid to high 20-minute range, and it wouldn't have been worth drafting. But in the end, I was wrong on my overall projection for him based on that shooting, which made me think he'd play fewer minutes. JJ Redick was a key portion of this team. 75th rank in fantasy. I think some people will be surprised with just how high he was there. And it's on the back of a ton of threes. Almost 3 triples per game, 17 points, 2.5 rebounds. I think somewhat surprisingly, Greg, 3 assists per game. And of course, no defense at all. Half a steal. 46 and 90 with 42% from 3 with an excellent true shooting of 61%. If JJ returns, do you think we probably see similar sort of output, or is the, and we'll talk about Fultz in a second, or is Markel Fultz perhaps going to cut into some of that playing time? Maybe we see 28, 27 from JJ as he heads into his, where are we? I'm trying to get his age up and I can't even find it. Where is he? Oh, he's 34. So he's age 34 season. Yeah, a couple of minutes off there.
Yeah, so you brought up Fultz, and we'll talk about him more in a second. Fultz is the player that I have the most difficult time figuring out to what is he going to be next year, what is he going to be for the next few years, because I think anywhere from like an all-star level player to just total bust wouldn't surprise me at this point. I think that all the Fultz stuff was so strange last season, and we didn't really see a lot of him either, so it's hard to really draw too much of a conclusion on him. For Redick, if he doesn't come back, I would assume it's because they added another star. If they don't do that, then I think that they do retain Redick. When he was off the court last year, it actually was Saric who saw the biggest usage boost on the team from 21.1% to 23.5%. So that is something to keep in mind. But then also bringing up Redick's age 34 season, I think that at best we see him slightly decline next season. But I think that at that kind of age in the NBA, and given that his game is so predicated on a lot of movement and moving off the screens, if he loses a step at all, then I think we could see him take a pretty significant step back in terms of his total output. The three-point shooting is always going to be there for him, but I am definitely concerned about his fantasy output for next season.
One thing that was impressive with Redick this season was his free throws are always impressive. His last 5 years, 92, 90, 89, 89, and 90 from the line. That's clearly really good, but he got to the line over 3 times per game, which turned that into a significant positive category for fantasy. Normally, he'd been a guy where all the value is coming from his three-pointers, but this year, he was able to add, one standard score worth of value in free throw percentage as well, and that's massive, and that bumps him from being a guy that's 110th best player to being the player who was 75th ranked overall. And if he can get to the line, which is the concern you have when you get older, can he maintain that drive and getting those shots? If that dips to 2.2 per game, which maybe is a little bit of an aggressive drop, but that really does cut back on that value that Redick had this season. And there's a couple of guys who came across, Ersan Ilyasova and Marco Bellinelli. They provided decent enough value. I don't think there's really much to talk about with Bellinelli for fantasy. I don't know if Ilyasova returns to this team or not, but he showed in Atlanta, in Philadelphia, when the minutes are there, the production's still going to be there, but he's clearly not a guy who a team is going to be prioritizing into a large role, whether it's this team or another one.
No, I agree with that. I think Ilyasova probably signs somewhere for the mid-level exception. It could be Philadelphia, but that I think also depends, I'll say once again, if they bring in one of those other stars. If not, I think Ilyasova ultimately probably ends up on a contender for the mid-level exception and probably is not going to be a standard league guy next year.
Let's talk about Rashawn Holmes, who many people were bringing out the old fantasy Dutch rudder for at the start of the season. I was very much anti that sort of thinking. People were like, oh, you've got to take him as a handcuff. He's still going to get, you know, 24 minutes per night and be this beast. And we saw that at the end of the 16-17 season when he was starting, when Embiid was out. He was killing it. He was putting up great numbers, top 50 type numbers, but he's just not that good. He just was never going to have that opportunity. Amir Johnson was the backup center. Rashawn Holmes was the third stringer. He does struggle defensively. Now, I love what he does with blocking shots. He can score. He can shoot. But there's just no opportunity for him to do that on this team. And you know, while taking him with a last pick in a draft means jack shit, because it clearly didn't work out. But some people held on to him way too long. And you've got to have an understanding of when to bite the bullet and when this isn't going to work out, when you see that pattern emerge. There's a couple of opportunities. But even when the games went in, Embiid would sit. It wasn't like he blew up and put up huge, huge numbers. Holmes could be part of a trade, and that could open up some value because he does have a fantasy-friendly game. But I think most people would have soured a little bit on what Holmes was able to do this season.
Yeah, and the biggest issue for him is, as long as he's in Philadelphia, it's going to be the playing time. He didn't play a ton with Embiid last year. I think they played him a few minutes towards the end of the season. I'm trying to bring up the two-man minutes to see if they played at all together. But I thought I remember them playing a few minutes. Yep. Yeah, towards the end of the season. But for the majority of the season, they didn't play together at all. So when we consider that both of us are higher on Embiid being healthy than the majority of the general public, it's hard to see a situation where Holmes gets a lot of playing time to be fantasy relevant, because the minutes just aren't there for him, and it's hard to produce stats when you're sitting on the bench.
Yeah, and look, even his block rate wasn't as high this season as what it had been in previous seasons. He was well behind that, 1.3 per 36. For his rookie season, he was at 2.1, so that's a significant dip there. His rebound rate did improve. He's still not a great rebounder, only 4 rebounds in 15 minutes, 10 per 36 as a center. Poor free throw shooting. I know he did have that strong season in 16-17 where he was the 112th ranked guy in only 20 minutes, but yeah, you were banking on having Embiid missing, you know, 60 games for him to have return any sort of value, and he was getting drafted, you know, way too high in pretty much every case. I saw people taking him inside the top 100 last season, which was nonsense at the time, and it turned out to be nonsense. Let's talk about a few other guys. Timothy John McConnell started the last couple of playoff games for this team. I don't think there's much of a realistic chance of that being something that continues into next season. He had his moments. He had a triple-double against your Knicks, Greg. 3 rebounds, 4 assists, a steal per game. He was really efficient, 50 and 80 as his percentages, 43% from 3 as a non-3-point shooter, only attempted 0.8 per game, so not really much happening there. But he's that occasional plug-and-play sort of guy whose upside, I believe, is fairly limited.
Yeah, we saw him have some value in games where Redick was hurt, and we saw McConnell see increased minutes. So if Redick was to not come back and they don't add somebody, which kind of a long shot up to me, then maybe we see McConnell with some more value. But most likely he's somebody to be left on the waiver wire. He could be streamed in certain spots where maybe a guy is out. But for the most part, McConnell, not really much to see from a fantasy standpoint, just because, like with Rashawn Holmes, the minutes aren't going to be there for the most part. But another guy who does have a fairly friendly fantasy game when he does get the playing time.
Let's talk Markel Fultz. It was one of the strangest situations we saw this season. The shoulder injury / no injury, him forgetting how to shoot, him lacking confidence, him sitting out basically 5 months of the season, recovering from whatever mental yips he had in terms of that shot, of people screwing around with his shooting mechanics, just the organization lying about shit continuously. It was really, really weird for Markel Fultz. And when he played, he did struggle most of the time. He was the 336th ranked player in only 18 minutes, 7-3-4 with 1 steal, 41 and 48% from the line, which is obviously horrendous. And like Ben Simmons, did not hit a single 3 this season. This is a guy that was a 40% 3-point shooter at Washington and was the consensus number one pick in the draft, a guy that can rack up those stats. Many people, short-sighted people, are writing him off. He's a bust. He's done. Oh, what a shit pick. I'm not one of those people. I think that he is going to be a very good player still in the NBA. I would be trying to acquire him as cheaply as I can in dynasty leagues. I think that he is very much in that Brandon Knight category of he is the guy that I'm going to be looking at with that last pick, depending on how things go in free agency with Philadelphia. Because if he finds himself in a 27-minute, 30-minute role next to Ben Simmons, he is going to be able to put up numbers. And all you have to do is look at the 11th of April, the last day of the regular season, where he played 25 minutes and had 13, 10, and 10 with two steals and a block and shot 46%. In the 10th game back after finally coming back into the rotation, the youngest player ever to have a triple-double in the NBA. I think he's going to be good. I know it was a disappointing season. There was a lot of weirdness, but I am in on Fultz still.
So I'm going to bring up one thing that's another pretty big positive for Fultz that I think a lot of people are going to have forgotten about at this point in time. He shot 41% from three in college.
Yep.
I don't know what the hell happened with his jump shot last year, but there was a point in time where he was able to make perimeter shots and he was able to do it efficiently. If he's not able to make shots, it's an issue for the Sixers team, because if you have two guys on the team that can't shoot the basketball and Ben Simmons and Markelle Fultz, it's difficult to see them working out playing together. But I think that there is a chance that we see Fultz step on the floor next year. He's able to shoot threes. And I think we have to say, I don't know what that'll happen in his rookie season, but let's just throw those numbers in the garbage. It was an odd year, and I don't think we could put any weight into anything that happened with Markelle Fultz last year. So I think there's a huge wide range of outcomes for Fultz next season. I think that if he's available towards the later rounds of a standard league draft, he's worth taking a flyer on, just saying, let's see what happens with him. And if it looks like it's not going to work out the first couple weeks of the season, then you drop him, and it's not a big deal. It's the end of the draft. I think that that's the type of guy that you want to kind of make that home run pick and really take a flyer on.
If a guy like Redick is gone, and depending on what they do with the free agency, there's a real chance that he can have a large role. Just go back and watch some of those, not you, Greg, because I'm sure you've seen them, the last 12 games of the season, when he came back, and have a look at his ability to get to wherever he wants. When he's got the ball, he gets wherever he wants. He has got spin moves, he's got step backs, he's got stutter steps. He can go wherever he wants to, and he can get his shot. Now, the shot wasn't always falling. There were some poor efficiency nights. But in those 12 games or whatever it was, he shot 46 in one game, 63 in another, 63 in another, 50 in another. There were some bad ones, some 20%, 39, 36, some poor shooting nights. But just watch him on the court. He scored in double digits, five of those. I keep saying random number of games. Let me count how many it actually was.
He played 14 games.
Yeah, he played 10 games at the end of the season. Yeah, 10 games to end the season. And he scored in double digits in five of them. And was shooting at a decent rate in four of them. He was getting steals. He was getting assists. His assist total, 870, 434, 433, 10 in those 10 games. Yeah, strong numbers. Good rebounder. Get steals. Block shots. Great chase down block guy. There is clear top 50, top 40, maybe top 30 upside. I don't think he's going to be a 40% three-point shooter in the NBA. He might not even be a 35% shooter, but it still can be there. You are riding him off at your peril. He is training with Drew Hanlon, one of the best shooting coaches that there is. His bounces there. He's athletic. He gets to where he wants. And if you've got a guy who's got the ball in his hands, and we know what Simmons can do with the ball in his hands, but just watch Fultz with the ball in his hands in those last games. He just gets wherever he wants, and he can just shake guys off. And if the shot starts falling, it's a real problem. And it opens up everything for this team. It opens up for him, for Embiid, for Simmons, for Covington. Everything gets unlocked if he can actually hit those shots, because his ability to create those shots is really at a pretty good level at his considerably young age.
Yeah, definitely. And then if you look at the counting stats last year, in only 18 minutes per game, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, and a steal. Those are pretty good stats for somebody who was 19 to 20 years old last year and was dealing with all kinds of nonsense. So there's so much upside here. I mean, the downside is very low. Except you just don't have to draft him very high next season.
No, I'm really pumped to see what happens. Now, a couple of other young guys in this team that we'll wrap up with, Timotei Luwawu-Cabarro and Justin Anderson, two guys who I have liked at times. I thought Justin Anderson showed quite a bit at times in the season. He's a guy who can get some steals and blocks. Luwawu-Cabarro really did struggle, dealt with a knee injury at times this year, but I was relatively impressed with what Anderson was able to do in that game where Fultz had that triple-double. Anderson scored 25 and 6 with a 3 and a block. He's able to do those things on the wing, get those steals and blocks going. Not someone who on this team you're ever going to be looking at as a long-term guy, but if he finds himself as part of a trade somewhere, I think he can be an interesting player at times. Who do you prefer more, him or Anderson or Luau Cabarrot?
At this point, it's Anderson, just because, like you said, with TLC, he took such a step back last year.
Oh, he was bad.
Where he looked pretty decent at times his rookie year, and to me, it's always such a big red flag. If somebody doesn't make improvements from year one to year two, let alone regress and get worse. So just because I've seen Anderson be productive at times and fairly consistently when he's gotten minutes through his career, he's still only 24 years old. It feels like he's been in the league for longer than that. To me, I think Anderson is the guy who I prefer both for real life and fantasy.
Luau Cabarrot was one of those players, and I said it ad nauseum last season when he was putting up this big run. This could be the best stretch that he ever has in his NBA career. Don't expect this to be going forward, because he was putting up, he had a run at the end of his rookie season in points scored, 17-5, 19-23, 19-18, 12-24, 14, to end last season. People go, oh shit, man, Luau Cabarrot, he was getting steals, he was getting assists, he was rebounding the ball well, he was shooting well, but the opportunity just wasn't there for him. It was never going to be there for him this season. And then he regressed in his efficiency. His true shooting went from 54 down to 51. His rebound rate dipped. His assist rate was about the same. His steal rate dropped. Yeah, there was just so many things that changed with what Timotei was able to do. And while I was pretty excited about him coming across from Megalex, he did disappoint last season, and I don't think either of these guys have got significant futures on this Philadelphia team, especially with pick 10 coming in, and it looks like the Sixers, I would think, will be looking at a wing player there. One of the Bridges would be my guess. Maybe they grab another guard, and maybe it's Lonnie Walker as another scorer type, but yeah, that could really push those two guys down in terms of their overall long-term value. But Anderson's the guy that, yeah, probably would prefer him as well over Luau Cabarrot. Greg, unless you've got some really strong thoughts on Jared Bayless's remaining one-year contract, I think that might wrap it up. Or maybe you've got some scorching hot Furkan Korkmaz takes.
I don't have any Korkman takes. No Nick Stauskas takes.
I forgot about it. Oh, he went to the Nets.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot they traded Stauskas. So I don't really have takes on anybody else on this team.
Korkmaz did make his NBA debut, broke his foot. He's a guy that, you know, he's really, really young still, but still not hasn't turned 21. I'm not sure he's ever going to be a top 250 type fantasy contributor. He was 507th this season in his limited minutes, but he does have an ability to improve, and maybe he can leapfrog Anderson and Luau Cabarrot in the next couple of years, but nothing to get too excited about. Greg, thank you for coming on for this podcast and for all the other podcasts that you've been on during this season recap. Series we've been doing. We're going to get you back on for a mock draft later in the week. So yes, still going to have you on the pod, but thanks for all your contributions across the season recap series.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Josh. If people want to find more of my work, you can follow me on Twitter at GErenbergDFS. I also post a link to my own podcast, which is the Foul Balls podcast, just DFS. I do like 15 minutes a night just breaking down the slate for the next days. Games, and that's pretty much it. Just one final question I have for you, Josh. Mm-hmm. Who do you think the Sixers are most likely to add between George, LeBron, Kawhi, or none of them?
Most likely to add, I will say LeBron. The player I want them to add is probably Paul George, just for keeping it on the timeline with Simmons and Embiid, and not being a guy who's necessarily taking the ball out of Simmons and Embiid's hands as much. I think LeBron is more likely than Paul George, though.
Yeah, I think. Well, LeBron is just the easiest, because I think that he's going to be looking to go to a contending team this year. And as people have pointed out on Twitter, his bald spot does look like the Liberty Bell.
I did say that. That is quite humorous. It's going to be a wild off-season, Greg. Lots of shit is going to go down. It might even go down by the time we finish recording this podcast. Who knows? I haven't checked my Woj notifications at this point. Greg, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Guys, you know where to find me. Subscribe to the podcast, 5-star ratings, all that stuff. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Joel Embiid.